You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. And now, Side B.
All right. So we've done quite a few Definitive 15s.
Mm-hmm.
We've done more than a few on producers or production teams, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Trackmasters was suggested to us by a listener, right?
Yes.
And I gotta say, like, this is a duo that growing up, I felt some kind of way about the Trackmasters.
Yes.
They had a bad rep amongst the backpack wearing set in the 90s.
Absolutely.
They were sort of, it was one of those things where, like, you know, people, it was like Puff and Trackmasters, but like at least Puff had like the association with Biggie and the Hitmen made some like harder stuff. So people thought of Trackmasters as like, ugh, the worst.
Mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm.
This was a super interesting Definitive 15 for me to like make and put together.
Okay.
I learned some things.
Yes.
I learned that, my God, Puff Daddy is the worst.
How so?
I'll explain when we get there.
Okay.
I thought I knew their discography, and most of it I knew pretty well, but like it was an interesting one to go through, because on the one hand, it's the kind of discography where for me it was easy to get like 7 or 9, maybe to 10. After that, I had to make some interesting choices.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a but the top part of this discography is like ridiculous.
I wouldn't even say the top part.
All of it?
Like, the records that made my list
to
include the hits are ridiculous. And so how this was different for me was, with any other Definitive 15 we've done, I wanted to showcase my favorites.
Mm.
This one, I kind of had to like concede and say, yo, like, you need to know that the Trackmasters did this record. So a lot of my records are their hits, and then my honorable mentions are just my favorites.
My approach to this was, I wanted to tell the story of Trackmasters.
Okay.
So I have like this, I got one or two choices where I'm like, I don't know if that would be in my list. I've got one where I'm like, you know, that's actually not even the biggest hit, but I think it's an important part of their story to tell.
Okay.
Because I think this is, it's an interesting look back at it. Like, their rise and fall was actually pretty fast. Like, they stayed around in the 2000s for a little while, but like peak Trackmasters is really like 94 kind of starts. You want to get them before then?
Yeah, 94, yes. Because one of their 94 records is on my list.
Yeah, like that starts there. But like by late 90s, they're kind of easing out already. They still got some hits that come in the early 2000s, but like, you know, they did a lot of damage in a short amount of time.
They did. So maybe they don't have to, you know, they don't have to have a long run.
Hmm.
You know, because they did so much. And there's some records on my list that I put on there like strictly because it was a flex.
Hmm.
Particularly their remixes.
So there's one thing. There's one story. I got a couple stories that I read about them that I want to share in during this episode. There's one I want to start us off with.
Okay.
So they back in 2012, Complex did a like Trackmasters tell all the stories behind their classic records. There's two parts to it. Super interesting reading. One of the things they talk about is, and this is where I'm going to get nerdy. They revealed, I guess, the way that they particularly sampled records.
Okay.
So they felt like they could sample almost anything, even if the original sample had really loud drums already, or even if like there were vocals in the way. And they had a technique for doing this that they called the fadies, like fading out, right? And they describe it, and Armand, when I tell this to you, you're going to think this sounds insane.
Okay.
They would basically chop up a sample into like dozens, if not like 100 different small parts.
Okay.
Like think like a 4-bar loop, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they would, for the minuscule part that had like the snare they wanted to take out, they would EQ or turn the volume down on that little tiny smallest part of it humanly possible.
Wow.
And so they would manipulate to get the stuff out of the original sample that they wanted, and then they put their big drums over the top of it.
Mm.
And so you're not gonna hear that, oh, the loop has a weird turned down, you know, drum part in this at its point, because they never let that loop go by itself. The drums were always there.
Mm-hmm.
So they felt like they were able to go and use samples that other producers might have heard and go, nah, I can't loop that. There's too much in the way.
Mm.
And I was like, wow. Because this is in the era before, like now you could do that in a much easier and cleaner way.
Mm-hmm.
But like back then, they're doing that on like an MPC.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's fire.
So with that that's in
fire.
Mind,
mm-hmm.
Armand, Definitive 15 Trackmasters, I'm going to let you get started.
You let me get started.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first record I wanted to pick a record that I didn't know that they did, and that was a lot older in their catalog, because the majority of my choices go from 96 to like 99.
Okay.
But you know, when you get into their early discography, it's like, oh snap, you guys did this, and it's actually a record that I like. And it's Cool G Rap, Ill Street Blues. I think that was an important song to tell to kind of talk about the early beginnings. I think they produced like an entire Chubb Rock album.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it doesn't immediately start off with Nas and Will Smith. You got to crawl before you walk.
Right.
And yeah, I think this was like, honestly, and I think this is really understated about a lot of your like commercial producers. Like, they really know the rappity rap stuff, as well as like rappity rappers, like pop artists, I should say, or pop rappers. Like, they can really rap. They know the concept of rappity rap. You look at somebody like T-Pain, Pitbull, Flo Rida. Like, these are guys who at one point really like they would pride themselves on their ability to jump in a cypher and rap, or to battle and to do all the rappity rap stuff that we love. But they learned how to make pop records. Honestly, Ill Street Blues sounds like the early beginnings of what you just described. Taking a sample and adding some hip hop drums over it, maybe an unconventional sample, maybe yeah. Something that people wouldn't really sample, and adding some really, really big like hip hop drums over it. We often talk about like Dark Child and I'm getting ahead of myself here, but we're talking about Dark Child and Timbaland and a lot of those producers. Like, Trackmasters are right up there with them, just in terms of what they were able to do. And I think this is like a foundational, we were able to do this type of record representation of the sound.
Yeah, I mean, it was going to be my honorable mentions, just out of like respect, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I get it. It's not one of my definitive 15, but I totally get why it's on there.
Mm-hmm.
It was by far the first thing that they became known for. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Where you at?
I mean, I got to start with Juicy.
Definitely on my list. Really weird about how I did my list, and we'll talk about that shortly.
Okay.
But yes, on my list.
To me, I mean, it's a definitive Biggie song. I think when people think of that sort of glossy sampling sort of sound of a certain era of the 90s, and they associate it with Puffy, Trackmasters, they were like the co-creator of that sound.
Absolutely.
Right. So, you know, Juicy is right at home with them, and, I mean, it's an iconic song, right? Like,
yeah.
And what I didn't realize before I did research for this episode was how much, I guess, how closely Trackmasters and Puff worked in the early years.
Yeah.
Basically before Steve Stout started managing them.
Yeah.
Because Puff was kind of, I won't say take advantage. That's a strong way to put it. But, he definitely would go to them and for stuff. And then, you know, you look at the credits and it's like, wait, this is produced by Puffy. What happened here?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it didn't happen in this case. Like, they just got their outright credit. But I mean, Juicy is iconic. It was Puff's idea for the sample, by the way.
Yep. That part is true, because I think they do show that in Notorious in the movie.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen that movie, actually.
Okay, you ain't missing nothing.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Yeah, it was his idea, because basically they took that album to Arista, and there were no hits. Mm. So when you hear, you like, I think you know this, and we talked about this on the Bad Boy Retro, and by you, I mean our listeners, like, when you listen to Ready to Die, there's clearly a distinction in Big as an MC. So Give Me the Loot, Machine Gun Funk, his voice is higher, he's more aggressive. But then there's Big Papa, Juicy, like the whole second half of the album, like he hits this, he turns this corner and he's a completely different rapper. And I think that's the rapper that many people have as like one of the greatest, right?
Yeah.
So are we done talking about Juicy?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to keep it Biggie, and then I'm just going to explain my list and how I did my list.
Okay.
So what I did was I didn't pick one song for an artist, because there are several artists that Trackmasters consistently worked with, and they've got like 3-4 smashes together. And I would be doing one a disservice by picking the other. So if we're picking Juicy, we have to go with One More Chance, and we have to go with Who Shot Ya.
And you want to talk about Puffy, Jack, and Credit. Like,
hey, Jack, Credit on both of those?
Yeah. Who Shot Ya says it's produced by Nasheem Merrick but the Trackmasters took what was, so the original part of Who Shot Ya, Nasheem Merrick just looped up I'm Afraid the Masquerade Is Over.
Mm-hmm. And the move.
That's right. And then Trackmasters actually came in and turned it into the beat that you hear now.
Yeah.
And then on One More Chance remix, like that, I think, I'm pretty sure that says, let's see, let's look at the credits for that. That says produced by Puffy and Rashad Smith. Hmm. But it's definitely produced by Trackmasters.
Yeah.
I mean,
what can't you say about One More Chance?
One More Chance is such a classic.
Yeah, I feel like we need to do a definitive 15 on like perfect songs.
It's a perfect hip hop record. It's a perfect hip hop record. It's so iconic. The video is iconic. Yeah. We've talked about One More Chance 1,000 times on the song, but like, I think most people think that's Puffy, right? Yeah. It's DeBarge, like that. That's Big blowing up, right?
Yeah.
But like, no. Not exactly.
Yeah.
Right? That's Trackmasters.
Yep.
And Who Shot Ya? I mean, jeez.
I mean, listen, it's the quintessential rappity rap record. All of your favorite artists who do rappity rap, like Who Shot Ya is the blueprint. It's the blueprint.
It's also kind of an interesting, like, what if moment in hip hop. Right, because I understand that, you know, that everybody says, okay, that was recorded way before Tupac got shot and it was unrelated to it. However, you know, what if maybe you don't release it? Now, we're denied hearing a classic.
Yeah.
But that's the song that triggers so much.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because if you're Tupac and you're feeling some kind of way about getting shot in New York, and then, you know, the guy who you thought you could trust comes out with a song almost tauntingly called Who Shot Ya, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
But Who Shot Ya is incredible. And to me, Who Shot Ya is like Biggie going to another level.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a case where it's like, he's still rapping aggressively, but it is much notably, like, it is like Biggie almost 2.0 in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Biggie that you end up hearing on Life After Death starts on Who Shot Ya.
Mm-hmm.
Who Shot Ya's incredible.
Yep.
The beat's incredible.
Yep.
Trackmasters have really good drums.
Yep.
But yeah, One More Chance. I mean, these are just like iconic songs, right?
Mm-hmm. I think pretty much every record on my list is iconic. It gets a little less iconic after 10.
Yeah, I hear
but
you.
Yeah, no, man, listen.
All right, I got another one. You ready?
Oh, okay, let's do it.
When I say Puff Jack their credit.
Oh boy.
You're All I Need.
Yes, on my list.
So when they made You're All I Need, the Puff Daddy remix, which no. I love how it lists like drum program. It says drum programming by Tone or whatever from the Trackmasters. And it's like, nah, they produced that.
He produced it.
Right. That was the last, that was the last straw for Steve Stout, apparently.
The last straw is hilarious.
Right? I mean, because it's like.
No, he's right.
You know, that song was, I can't even explain how big that song was.
Yeah.
That's the song that made Method Man a superstar.
Yep.
You know, everybody thought that out of everybody in Wu-Tang, he had potential. You know, he was obviously the one who was, you know, he could do this and he could do that. And then, you know, Takao comes out. It's pretty grimy.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
You're All I Need must have made Def Jam feel like, oh my God, what did we stumble into?
Because there's three versions of You're All I Need, right?
Right. There's the original.
Yep, that no one likes. I never hear anybody say it's whack, but I feel like the other two versions just eclipse it. There is the RZA version that I prefer.
Yeah.
But then this version, I feel like the RZA version was like the BET version and the Trackmasters version was the MTV Jams, Yo MTV Raps version. And so as a result, it just blew up. And it's probably like easier to digest maybe, just as far as like presentation.
Yeah.
But yeah, great record, 100% on my list.
Classic.
Absolutely. Yep.
Absolute classic.
Okay.
One last thing I was going to say is like, interesting example, like that song blew up like to a ridiculous amount, right?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't hit number one on Billboard.
Mm.
It's a good example of how like, they played that video so much.
Mm-hmm.
That like.
It's an iconic video.
Yeah. If the current rules were in effect where videos count towards your Billboard numbers, that's probably number one.
Mm-hmm.
But iconic song.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. I'm going to switch up the tempo just a little bit.
I think I know where you're going.
Maybe, because there's a few switches.
Okay.
I'm going to go with another cluster of songs by a group.
I know where you're going.
And yeah, you know where I'm going. This has to be on the list. Soul for Real, Candy Rain.
Mm-hmm.
Along with the Every Little Thing I Do remix.
Remix?
Yeah, the remix is dope. The original's great too. The original's great too. So I'll just include original and remix. But yes, original and remix.
So for me, I was trying to limit. Like, I was like, listen, am I really going to have two Soul for Real songs in my top 15?
Yes. Actually.
So... Marissa helped cast the deciding vote, which one was going to make it. We were driving around in the car and Candy Rain is classic, is incredible.
It's iconic.
Yeah. It's iconic. It definitely sounds like a middle school, like dance song.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right. It's every little thing I do is a little bit more mature.
Yes.
And so I gave it the nod for that, but I love them both.
Wow. Come on, man. Nostalgia. Come on. You didn't try to, That wasn't your go-to dance. You see a girl on the other side of the cafeteria. Soul for Real's blaring out the speakers. You start to walk over in your silver tabs.
Oh my God. They're not bringing those back, right?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like
silver tabs.
I feel Jesus. Like middle-aged white men have like they have held on to the Carpenter gene for dear life.
Mm.
So I don't know if Silver Tabs can make a comeback because of that. Silver Tabs were fire. I used to be hyped when my parents would take me to JCPenney. Like, oh, we getting Silver Tabs this year.
Didn't we? Did we do a definitive 15 of like middle school jams with
yeah,
Marissa?
We did... We did a definitive 15 on, hold on. It might be on Spotify. It's on something. Hold on.
I love how we don't even know our own show.
We've done a lot. 1999. Yep.
It's no, we did 90 slow jams.
We did 90 slow jams.
Yeah. See, the problem, these are not exactly, I wouldn't call these 90s. I wouldn't call these slow jams.
No, because you would have to, we could do a definitive 15 on school dances because you'd have to include stuff like Amy Grant, Baby Baby.
Marissa's going to insist on coming back on the show for that.
Absolutely. You know, like, see, I went to a predominantly white school. So like I can, hey, my experience is probably similar to yours. So like, you know, One Sweet Day, Michael Bolton, How Am I Supposed to Live Without You?
Oh man, listen, I swear,
Bryan Adams, Everything I Do. Yeah. All that stuff.
I definitely made a mixtape when I was like, how old was I? I must have been like 8. Made a tape for a girl that had that Bryan Adams song on it.
I thought
that was my in.
That's the closer.
If she listens that long.
Oh, okay. Yeah, she might not get to the whole. Was it a 60-minute tape or a 90-minute tape?
I mean, you know me.
Yeah. See, in today's market, you'd have been good. 20 tracks.
Now you go with the 30-minute tape now, right? It's like...
Yeah. Well, no, not necessarily.
Got to get my streaming numbers up.
Yeah. Get your streams up. You got to get the 90-minute tape.
Now what? You say, check my SoundCloud. I made you a mix? I don't even know.
The Wave is actually... Yeah, you can make a private playlist. It's in some now.
Private playlist.
Yeah. Yep. So if you're like me, like people follow my Spotify, they'll subscribe to my playlist, stuff like that. So yeah, if I want to make one for my girl, yeah, nah, you're not getting that. Like, come on, it's got the real fire. I'm not telling y'all records. So you can dedicate it to yours. Get out of here.
I until we did the show, I had no idea that Trackmasters did Soul For Real, Every Little Thing I Do or Candy Rain.
Really?
I had no idea.
Yeah, because they produced a lot of they produced some records on Heavy D's Nothing But Love album.
Right. Which is, it kind of comes in with the whole, like, it's really how intertwined Bad Boy and Trackmasters are. It all starts with Uptown, and like, you know, it goes from there.
There it is.
You gotta think that the folks at Uptown Records in like 1995 must have been sitting back going, how did we not lock all these people down?
Hey man.
I know. I'm just saying. They had all these people in the building.
Yeah. It is what it is.
All right. I'm gonna switch gears a little bit.
Okay.
We need to talk about your man, LL Cool J.
Absolutely. Where are you going?
I have 3 LL songs on here.
So do I.
They're the same 3. It's got to be Hey Lover, I Shot Your Remix, and Loungin'.
Absolutely.
Remix. Loungin' Absolutely. Remix. Let's keep it clear.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The story that Trackmasters tell about the making of Hey Lover is ridiculous.
Okay.
So they make the beat.
That's one of my favorite songs ever.
So they make the beat. They're in the studio with LL Cool J. And they're talking about like the concept of the song, and like they're like, all right, well, we got someone to sing on this hook. Talking to LL about who he had in mind. So this is 1995, right? Like late 94, early 95, probably. Peak Boyz II Men.
Mm-hmm.
LL Cool J's like, I want Boyz II Men on it. And they were like, well, yeah, I mean, sure. But like, who do you? And they're like, he's like, I want Boyz II Men on it. So they like, they figure out, like, call a manager, do whatever, right? They, a contact of a contact. They figure out, like, so they're doing this like on the phone, like right now. They figure out Boyz II Men happen to be in Philly right now shooting a video.
Wow.
So they get in the car. They go find the video. Shoot.
Wow.
They pull the lead singer in. Boyz II Men, Wanya.
Yep.
Wanya. And they've got the beat on cassette. They got LL in the back seat. They play the beat. LL's rapping the song for them in real time.
Wow.
Wanya hears this and goes, love it. We got to do this. Let's do this now.
Nice.
Except all they had was the beat on cassette. But they didn't want to ruin this moment.
Right.
So they went in the studio. They basically like loaded their beat off cassette into the MPC, played it that way. They didn't redo it. It's not the pristine quality. They just did it right off the cassette and they recorded it right there.
Fire.
Hey Lover is an underrated song. And if you didn't really, like, if you weren't around in 95, if you weren't really listening to hip hop in 95, I don't know if that song, like, if you understand and appreciate that song the same way, right? Because it's a comeback for LL.
Yeah, he's every other album.
Right.
He's coming off 14 Shots to the Dome. They weren't really feeling LL.
No, his last single before that was Stand By Your Man.
What? Okay. Sure.
Which is off of 14 Shots to the Dome. So that's LL and Marley Marl, right? Like, that's very notably like a certain era of hip hop, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because before that was Pink Cookies in a Plastic Bag, right? Like, that's mm-hmm. that's Marley Marl, Easy Mo B. Like, that's a different kind of hip hop than what 95 is. Because we've talked on the show a lot before about like when sounds change. Mm-hmm. And like, I think the Trackmasters are kind of a missing link in my theory about like the 90s sound changing, right? Mm-hmm. Because One More Chance remix, even You're All I Need, but like, Hey Lover, I Shot You, like, this is like notably different than, like, Juicy was only a year before. Mm-hmm. Juicy sounds like old school mm-hmm. to me. Whereas like everything from like that the Trackmasters do from 95 onwards sounds like, yeah, that's what 90s hip hop sounds like to me. It's a crisper, cleaner sound to me. Mm. So like for LL Cool J, this is, you know, he'd been away for a couple years. All these other huge names in hip hop like blow up. Cause like his last single is October 93. So in the meantime, that's Wu-Tang, that's Snoop, that's Nas, that's Biggie. Like mm-hmm. this whole other era has come in. And so Hey Lover is him being like, no, it's LL Cool J. I'm still here.
Yeah.
And you're a big LL fan anyway.
Yes. My first favorite rapper. I remember after an episode of, they premiered this video on NBC after an episode of In the House. Mm. So while the credits are rolling, they're like, yeah, next week we're going to premiere LL Cool J's new song, Hey Lover, featuring Boyz II Men. And so while the credits are rolling, they played a snippet. And I was like, what is this? I need this right now. Lo and behold. But I think that's back when In the House was good. So I watched In the House and then I stayed on NBC and watched the video and loved it. Like that was, I had the cassette single. Later on, I bought Mr. Smith. Like, nah, it's the Dirty Mac and Anthem. So if you liked the girl and she was, you know, in a committed relationship, that would go on your mixtape. Break you off a little chump change to do your hair. That seems to be enough to satisfy your needs. Oh, but there's a deeper level if you follow our lead. That's a Dirty Mac and Anthem. That's a great song. Dirty Mac. Fantastic feature. To me, it's a perfect song. I don't know if it goes on my Definitive 15, but it's a perfect song.
Wait, you didn't have Hey Lover on your Trackmasters Definitive 15?
No. It is. I'm saying if we did a perfect hip hop song, Definitive 15.
I don't know if Hey Lover is a perfect hip hop song.
It's a perfect song.
It's dope.
Okay.
No, perfect is a high bar.
It is a high bar and it meets it.
All right.
Hey Lover, you got Lounger remix that is incredibly underrated.
Super underrated. It was a really big hit.
Yeah. It's peak total. That's peak one pants leg up.
Oh, man. All right, be honest. Did you ever try the one pants leg up?
Absolutely. What?
You know what the worst part is?
What?
So did I.
Oh, man. Come on. You kind of like, but you kind of had to. Like, you're obligated. As a head in 96, you had to.
Everybody did. Oh, man. It was rough. It was real rough. Because you had to see, yeah, you really had to know how to get that cuff and fold right.
Yeah, because the easy way was to do the sweatpants, right?
No. Everybody tried it with jeans.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying the easy way was to do sweatpants, right. But everybody did jeans. Yes. Yeah. You had to do the pin roll, like the fold over, because we had baggy jeans, so you had to fold it over and then cuff it up, and then as the day progressed, it would fall down.
You're fussing with it the whole time. Listen, if you were back to school and you're if you were old enough in 96 where you were, you know, aware of fashion and you maybe could get your parents to get you some nicer stuff or whatever, your whole goal was you were trying to have your jeans with the one pant leg up and you were trying to wear some more up-tempos. That was the goal.
That was the goal.
Me, I had the much up-tempos. I had them in two colors. I had them in black. I had the black with the white, with the white around the letter. And then I had the all white with the blue. The all white with the blue.
All white with the blue are crazy.
I got those on sale. And those ended up being what I played because I played high school basketball that year. That's what I ended up playing basketball in because our colors were white and blue. And that was the requirement. I had to get some shoes in white and blue. The problem was that I liked them so much, I kept wearing them during the day. And then, of course, you know, my parents got mad at me. They were like, those are for basketball. I was like, yeah, but they look good.
But they look good.
Oh, man.
Perfect. All right. Well, so I just found like 7 different photos of LL Cool J wearing his pants leg up in different outfits. So that'll be going on our Instagram at CRS Podcast.
Now I got to ask, you going to bring that back for the lookbook?
Dang, I should have for the fall lookbook. Dang.
You know what you need? You need the remix for the lookbook.
I could do because you can't really do the winter lookbook like that because it's cold out. You don't want the, like, pants leg up is like a fall staple.
Yeah, I'm kind of hot, but I'm kind of cold.
Yes. it's like when you're sleeping and like you're in the cover, but you got the one leg out to balance your body temperature. It's like that. Like, I'm hot and I want to be hot, but also this one leg drops my body temperature 8 degrees and now I'm fine. And we didn't even get into I Shotcha. One of the hardest beats ever.
I Shotcha was specifically meant to be like LL Cool J wanted something like Who Shotcha.
Wow. It's a better beat than Who Shotcha.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
What?
Yes. It's a better beat. It's a harder beat. Yep.
No.
Yep. If I want to rap and I got between Who Shotcha and I Shotcha, I'm going I Shotcha. Who Shotcha is easy to rap on. It's open. It's airy. Anybody can get off on it. Nah, I'm aggressive. Give me I Shotcha.
Okay.
Who Shotcha is a better song.
Yes.
But I Shotcha is fire.
Who has the best Who's the best verse on I Shotcha?
Foxy. Prodigy. No, LL.
Prodigy.
No, L. No. It goes.
I'm just gonna keep saying it.
You are. LL and Foxy have better verses than Prodigy, but then Prodigy's third, and then Fat Joe.
Wait, you have Keith Murray fifth?
Yes. Yeah, because Keith Murray and Prodigy would diss each other on their record.
Well, yeah.
No. So I get busy. No, I'm cool. No thanks.
I'm looking at these verses right now. No Prodigy. Come on.
No, I remember Foxy was iconic because the Foxy verse was like, who's this girl at the end that's not Lil' Kim?
Right.
She had this real laid back, raspy verse. She had a really unique look to her, but she was still like, she fit in the aesthetic. She's talking all this designer high fashion stuff, but she's in a like the roughest like hip hop video and it worked. That's super fire. And then LL always comes in at the end of Posse Cuts, 4-3-2-1, and just demolishes everybody because he waits and writes his verse last. Because he cheats. And it's underrated. We need to move on. But it's underrated. Fat Joe's rap voice is underrated. His old rap voice. I like it.
Not his Betcha Man Can't. Wait, is he even on that song?
Yeah. That's on Don Cartagena.
Well, you know, those efforts, those were group albums, basically.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely Big Pun and Cuban Link featuring Fat Joe. Okay. All right. Let's move on.
Now I'm looking at this Don Cartagena album.
That was my joint. I loved that album. We talked about that album at length because you don't like the Primo record.
I don't.
And you're crazy. The Puff Daddy record is actually dope.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Puff Daddy record's dope.
Oh, I walk on by with Charlie.
Okay.
All right.
Where else should we go? Okay.
Well, let's go. I did LL. There's two major artists that I know we got to get to.
Okay. Do you want to do those now?
I'm assuming we're going to talk about Nas and Will Smith at some point.
Absolutely.
All right. So where do you want to start?
Another artist too. But okay. What do you got? I don't know if you want to talk about him on the show.
What do we got?
R. Kelly.
Well,
because we got to talk about R. Kelly and Trackmasters in two parts.
Okay.
So we got to talk about the R album.
Yeah.
And we got to specifically talk about TP2.com because Fiesta Remix is 100% on my list.
Fiesta Remix has to be on the list. Sure.
Iconic record. I mean, I even like the original version of Fiesta with, was Jadakiss on the original version?
That's a good question. Yeah, who is on the original Fiesta?
Because and we're getting ahead of ourselves, and maybe I should have waited to talk about this because...
Yeah, I was waiting until later, but...
Okay, all right, we'll wait. All right, so R. Kelly, we'll go back. I'll go with... Let's get some of these small ones out the way. So I've got Mary J. Blige, Be Happy on my list.
Not on my list, but I get it.
It represents... Like, there's quite a few... There's a couple of, like, R&B Trackmaster records on this list. Because I forgot their impact on R&B. I really did. Mm. I really did. Because again, I think to your point, like a lot of their stuff gets convoluted with Bad Boy.
Right.
So they're on Faith's first album. They're on Mary J. Blige's second album that Puff executive produces. Like, yeah. So you're right there. So yeah, I don't really have much to say because we got to move on. There's other more important stuff to talk about. But yeah, Be Happy's on my list. Absolutely.
I think we should talk about Nas.
Let's do it.
I have three Nas records on here.
I have two.
And I'm leaving some crazy ones off.
I have a few on my honorable mentions. I actually have like four on my honorable mentions, but I have two on my definitive.
So I had to put The Message on there.
Yes.
I put The Message and I put If I Ruled the World on there.
There you go. We're on the show. Yes.
We've talked about it before with Nas. There's a reason why they're paired together in the video. They represent the sort of the two different things that they were trying to do with It Was Written. It was, don't worry, Nas is still rapping, but we're making it more accessible. But to me, they are perfectly symbolic of the Trackmasters, which is... First of all, in 96, everybody had their arms crossed over If I Ruled the World. But like, that is nowhere, like considering where hip hop went just 1 year later with radio records, that is nothing, that is nowhere near as shiny as it got, right? That like, If I Ruled the World is, it's a really good song. It's a classic mm-hmm. record.
Yeah.
But like, but the Trackmasters also did these like really dope, hard records.
Yes.
We talked about Who Shotcha, I Shotcha Remix, but like The Message.
Yes.
Is ridiculous.
Amazing.
It's a perfect sample. That is a perfect beat.
Yep.
There's absolutely nothing I would change. That's a perfect song.
Oh. Okay. That's one of my favorite Nas records. So I like, if not my favorite. So I'm cool with you saying that.
And so those two are definitely on my definitive 15 because they really tell the story of like of Nas and what they were trying to do with Nas. But I also included Affirmative Action, and here's why.
Okay, go ahead. I was like, okay. Go ahead.
So it continues this trend that the Trackmasters have of like, oh, we've got the crazy beat for the posse cut, right? But also, The Firm is like a big part of the story for them mm-hmm. because it doesn't really work out the way that they wanted it to.
Right.
But there's this like alternate reality where maybe it works out different in Affirmative Action. But Affirmative Action as it is right now, that is, I mean, it's an astonishing beat. It's an astonishing song. It's perfect. But I think talking about Trackmasters and not talking about The Firm, and not talking about really what that represents for them, which is like they've got all this success in really a short, because Juicy is just 2 years before If I Ruled the World. Mm-hmm. And in mm-hmm. that 2 year time span, Juicy, You're All I Need, One More Chance, Everything I Do, all the LL records, mm-hmm. they're just hit after, like they are knocking this stuff out. And mm-hmm. Puff already has his label. Mm-hmm. So it's no surprise, especially with somebody like Steve Stout now as their manager, that like they were going to be, okay, it was like, okay, Trackmasters need some artists now, right? Mm-hmm. And it starts with Steve Stout getting artists to manage, right? Starts with Nas, starts with Foxy, starts with those people. But then mm-hmm. eventually, and then, you know, the firm kind of kicks that door open a little bit more. And then eventually they get their own label and their own artist. And we'll talk, I want to talk about that too. But like Affirmative Action is like, it's the beginning of that really. Mm-hmm. So it's, I mean, in addition to being one of my favorite songs ever, like I had to put it on the list.
I'm not going to hold you. The remix was really close to making my list. It ended up being an honorable mention.
They produced the remix too?
Yeah. Yeah. They were taking those like Marley. It's ironic. They're taking a lot of those Marley Marl records and like updating them.
Oh, yeah.
That's really ironic. But yeah, I love the remix. I love the Firm Biz remix. Like, oh my God. Like, I think we talked about this on a Nas retro, but like, I kind of feel like Dre ruined the firm. I feel like they overthought it.
Everybody overthought it for sure.
Yeah. I feel like they overthought it.
It's tough to say that Dre ruined the firm to me.
I don't think so because Nas and Trackmasters and Foxy already have a track record. They have a rhythm. So when Dre comes in and this is what you get, like, I'm going to blame that on Dre before Trackmasters.
Maybe. I mean, the real problem, like, and so it's funny, right? Everything on the album is produced either by Trackmasters or Dre, with the exception of Firm Biz.
Who did Firm Biz?
LES, who might as well have been the third Trackmaster. But he wasn't. Because what I mean by that is like where Trackmasters were, like LES was often like working alongside, even though he was working with Nas even before because he does Life's a Bitch, right?
Yeah,
but like he ends up working alongside them on all sorts of stuff for Nas, right? Yeah. I mean, LES is Sugar Hill for AZ. It's Favor for a Favor, Find Your Wealth, Nostradamus. Wow, LES did I'm Real. I guess I didn't realize that.
For J-Lo?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
LES does Black Republican. LES, like LES has a lot going on. But okay. But Firm Biz, like, what if they just don't lead that album off with Firm Biz?
Yeah, I think a lot of things change if Firm Biz isn't the first single.
But I know why it's the first single, because it was 1997.
Yes.
And Puff messed everybody up.
Yes.
They all thought they needed that kind of song. See LL Cool J Phenomenon. See Jay-Z Sunshine. We've talked about it on the show because it's so important, because it derails so much. Like, I love Puff and what he did for hip hop. I do. He made amazing records. But also, that, like, it's like when we talked about hip hop what ifs, right? I mean, it's the biggest what if of all, right? It's like, if Big doesn't die, is Puffy S successful? And if that's the case, there's a whole chain reaction that happens. Mm-hmm. Everybody overreacts for their lead singles in fall of 97. Most mm-hmm. of them flop. Def Jam comes roaring back in 98 with a very notable, different sound anchored by DMX that is meant to be a counterpoint. Mm-hmm. And does any of that happen in the same way? Who knows? Right? Yeah. But like, there's a lot of people who swung and missed with, you know, their lead single. You can argue another Trackmasters record is kind of a swing and miss, right? It was not fall of 97, but that's just because things got delayed a bit because Biggie died. But like when Cameron comes out in spring of 98 with Horse and Carriage, that's a Trackmasters record. Now that record has all sorts of other problems because that's the beginning of the end for Cameron and Mace. But like that was not the record for the time.
Yeah.
You know, he was stuck between two worlds really, right? Is he going to do the shiny stuff or is he going to do the harder stuff?
Yeah.
Sorry, I just went on a long rant. But yeah, anyway, the Firm album, I hear you, like that Dre kind of might have ruined it, but like, I don't know, Firm Fiasco and Phone Tap are two of the best songs on that album. So like, But you know, we got Desperados.
Don't do that.
What?
Don't do that.
Desperados. No, Desperados is incredible.
Okay.
You're not a fan of Desperados?
No, Desperados is dope.
That's on my honorable mentions for Trackmasters. I love Desperados. It's peak cannabis.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
I don't have anything else to say about Nas. Maybe we should just get all the large conversations out the way, and then we can just do the one-offs and be done. You want to talk Will Smith?
Sure, we can do Will Smith.
How many Will Smith records do you have on your list?
I have one, and it was Begrudging.
Oh, wow. I have two.
I felt I had to have Men in Black on there.
See, and I felt like I had to have Getting Jiggy With It on there.
To me, Men in Black was, like, if I'm telling the story of Trackmasters, Men in Black is what brought Will Smith back.
It brought him back, but I think Getting Jiggy With It brought him over the top. Like, it wasn't a one-off. Like, Getting Jiggy With It is, to me, Getting Jiggy With It is more iconic than Men in Black. I think Men in Black is the better record. But I think we're arguing over semantics, because to me, both are on my list, because you have to tell the story, God, with both of them. With that whole Big Willie style album, because they did a lot of that.
Yeah.
Things got different for them after they produced for Will Smith.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know who else did a lot of stuff on that Will Smith album is L.E.S.
See, there you go.
L.E.S. co-produces Miami and Getting Jiggy With It.
Your family got ruined Will Smith for me for a long time.
How so?
You remember that skit where they made fun of his ad-libs and how clean he was as a rapper? Isn't that amazing that in 1997 Will Smith was catching hell for being family friendly?
It wasn't just family friendly, right?
Well, it wasn't just cursing.
Because it was not cursing paired with Trackmasters operating at like total peak. Oh, okay, Puff, you want to sample that? Cool. Here's what we're doing.
They sample some stuff, man.
Just the two of us?
There's another Will Smith record that they sampled something crazy. I mean, they got a little crazy. I don't know that they didn't produce Willennium, did they? Like, sampling Rock the Casbah, like, come on, man, really?
Who does? Willennium is Will 2K, right?
Yes.
Oh, that's Trackmasters.
I'm saying, it goes back to your story that you told about them feeling like they could sample anything. These are heat checks.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are heat checks.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Will 2K.
That's a terrible song.
Wild Wild West is a terrible song.
Listen, don't do that. My son loves that record.
Really?
Yeah, my son loves that record. He wants to be Will Smith. Like, Will Smith is his guy. So he knows that song, like, he can rap it.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's his guy.
The guy who produced this, interesting guy. Will, not anybody that we've ever really talked about ever on the show. He goes by 8-Bit, but he wrote No 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 for Destiny's Child. He produced Bootylicious.
Okay.
But then he goes on and gets Lady Gaga signed and co-writes a bunch of her early stuff. Now that's an interesting career.
So earliest stuff is like Paparazzi. And
yep. Yep.
Nice. He's probably chilling right now.
You would hope so.
Yeah.
Because he co-wrote, produced, played on like five songs from her debut album. Oh, and then co-produced and co-wrote another like three, and then he's co-executive producer. So you gotta imagine he made quite a bit of money off that.
Yeah.
Wild Wild West is terrible. So I felt like I had to put Men in Black on there because, like, if I'm telling the story, it's like Trackmasters. This is the power of Trackmasters, right? Mm-hmm. We're like, mm-hmm. in these, you know, 94, 95, 96, they are like doing everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, they can bring Will Smith back.
Mm.
they tell the story about how they made Men in Black, where how they made the song, where Will Smith had come from some like industry party, and the way they described him dressing up and looking, he looked like all Hollywood basically in their terms, right? So you can imagine what that might have meant in 96 97. And basically he said, he was like, I will do whatever you guys say. He's like, just make me cool again. Like, he was that honest and open with them. And they went and they made Men in Black. And so that's Coco singing the hook.
Oh, wow. That is Coco.
She, nice. she thought the song was whack, and, said, don't credit, and said, don't put it featuring Coco.
What?
It's one of those that you, maybe you make a different decision.
First of all, that song is fire. Don't do that.
Well, now, maybe in her defense, imagine if you've never seen the movie Men in Black and you don't see the video and you hear the song and you're like, what is he talking about?
But you also got to think about it logistically. Men in Black was after Independence Day, right?
That's right.
So if you understand, like, yo, this is Will Smith coming off of Independence Day, about to release another summer movie, and this is the lead song from the soundtrack. Like, come on. Come on.
I know.
Come on.
What else is on that soundtrack? Escobar 97.
Escobar 97. There's an Alicia Keys song, and that's all I remember.
Escobar 97. Also Trackmasters.
Yeah, honorable mention for me.
So wait, who wrote Men in Black? Is that Will?
I don't know.
Because Nas writes Just Cruisin', which...
Cool. Not on my list.
Not on your list. Oh, I take that back. Nas has writing credits on Men in Black.
Ah. So he did not write Getting Jiggy With It, but he did write Men in Black and Just Cruisin'. But he
and gets Miami.
And Miami. But he gets credit for Getting Jiggy With It.
Does he?
I mean, by getting credit, like, people say... Oh, like, yeah. That's the narrative, is that Nas wrote it.
I'm looking through the credits now, trying to see if I can find out.
Can't resume on the impending doom.
Nas says he hung out with Will in the studio for Getting Jiggy With It. He might have said a line or two or three to him, but otherwise he says Will Smith wrote that song.
Okay.
Okay. I think I can even, if I go back and look at the lyrics, I bet I can pick out the Nas line. There's one part where all of a sudden the flow switches a little bit and you're like, wait a minute.
It's like the part on 30 Hours that Drake wrote. The ex gave me the best years of a life. Like, that's clearly a Drake bar.
Right.
Sharp left.
Okay. So you had Getting Jiggy With It on. So why and get so Black. So pitch Getting Jiggy With It to me. Why Getting Jiggy With It?
Because it's iconic. What? I feel like when you think of Will Smith, and you think of the second half of his, not Fresh Prince, when you think of Will Smith, the record to me that comes to mind is Getting Jiggy With It. It took over every skating rink in the seventh grade in 1997. Like, it's an iconic record. If we're talking definitive, it defines Will Smith as a rapper, post Jazzy Jeff, post TV, like Hollywood Will Smith. It's that record.
It has not aged. Actually, let's be honest. Most of these 97 Will Smith songs have not aged well at all.
I like Just the Two of Us.
I know why. You know which one has probably aged the worst?
What's that?
Miami.
Oh, yeah. Miami's terrible.
Terrible.
Yeah, Miami's terrible.
Yeah. It's so bad.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Yeah. All right, that's Will Smith. You know who we didn't mention? We talked about her briefly because she was on a previous on two previous songs. I had Al B on my list as well. Here's why it's on my list. This is a case of, like, if I'm telling the story of Trackmasters, like, so after the success with Nas, like, Foxy Brown is not on their label, but Foxy Brown is their artist.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like, they produce a lot of that first album for her.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, it's not a classic album, right?
Got some joints though.
It's got some records.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Get Me Home?
It's also on my list. I love that record.
It's nowhere on my list.
Okay.
But we could talk about that.
I'm not gonna, yeah.
Holy Matrimony, Letter of the Firm.
If I. Oh my God, that Luther sample's crazy.
But I'll Be. Oh man.
Yeah. That record was different. I didn't appreciate that record until I got older. I didn't like it in 97. It was too jiggy for me.
Oh, this was too jiggy for you in 97?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, you would never do this kind of song now, right? Foxy's rapping just too hard for the verses.
You think so?
Yeah, like nowadays. I don't know. Foxy on a commercially successful song, it's kind of like with Nicki raps that way, but you know Nicki can rap a different way. So you always wonder, like, why is she always trying to rap like Foxy Brown, basically? But like with Foxy, that was how she rapped.
Yeah.
It's not like Foxy was going to sing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but Jay is so freaking effortless on I'll Be.
Yeah, Jay in faster tempos is underrated. You get Jay in that 90 BPM range and get some urgency behind his delivery. And also, this is 97 Jay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, different.
Yeah. Jay obviously writing for Foxy here.
Of course.
But no, I'll Be is, you know, like here's a case where it's like, okay, this is 90, end of 96 into 97. Because Get You Home was the first single, right? Get Me Home, yes. Sorry. So like after their success with Nas that it was written, now they're like, okay, we introduced Foxy on the LL Cool J project. You heard her on the Nas album. Now she's the next like big star. And I don't know if I felt like I had to have Foxy on here. So that's why she's on my list.
Yeah. Agreed.
Okay.
Agreed.
I only have 3 left in my 15.
I have 1, 2, 3. And okay. Then we got to go back and talk about R. Kelly. So I have 4 actually.
Well, Fiesta Remix is on mine.
Okay. You want to talk R. Kelly now?
Sure, we can talk about Kelly right now.
Because we kind of have to discuss Spanish guitar Trackmasters.
first heard on Affirmative Action.
Ah, yes, that is correct.
Yeah, Spanish guitar Trackmasters. Trackmasters and R. Kelly, there's a long-standing like professional relationship there.
Mm-hmm.
They did a handful of stuff for sure on that R album. But then, of course, they do Fiesta Remix, the really not good Best of Both Worlds projects. I think the definitive Trackmasters record from this kind of era, from that late 90s era with R. Kelly, is it Did You Ever Think?
No. With him and Trackmasters?
Yeah. Is there another one I should be thinking of?
Hold on.
Yeah.
We really should have looked up R. Kelly and Trackmasters.
I'm looking at the credits right now.
Okay.
And R. Kelly produces a lot of this stuff on his own.
Okay.
So like, you know, If I Could Turn Back the Hands of Time, I Believe I Can Fly, Half on a Baby, When a Woman's Fed Up, like that's all R. Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
But Trackmasters is We Ride.
Nope.
That's a no. If I'm With You, Only the Loot Can Make Me Happy.
The Loot. Shut up.
Wait, that was a single in the UK?
Not in the UK.
Oh, because they put out, the UK got a maxi single. It was Only the Loot Can Make Me Happy, When a Woman's Fed Up, and I Can't Sleep.
Yeah, okay. I'm looking at the R era, and you're right.
Did You Ever Think it was fire?
Yes, it was.
That is a freaking fantastic beat.
Yep. Is that the best Spanish guitar Trackmasters beat?
No, Affirmative Action.
Affirmative Action, okay. Do you remember Sosa, AZ record that was on Pieces of a Man?
No, I never owned Pieces of a Man, so that's not really in my repertoire.
Me neither, but I got that from oh, what was the name of that? One of those websites, Underground Hip Hop, TheReal.com, something like that. One of those websites had it on there, and that's where I got it from. That's a dope. It's like a darker affirmative action.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's dope. It's dope. Okay. Do we want to talk about... No, we'll talk about... No. We'll talk about R. Kelly and Jay-Z later. Let's get through our 15.
I want to talk about what was kind of a swing and a miss for them, but I think it's important if I'm telling this story.
Okay.
I want to talk about Trackmasters and 50 Cent.
Yes. How to Rob is on my list.
It's on my list, even though it's not like one of my 15 favorite ones. But I think like... if you're talking about the story of Trackmasters, like that next stage in evolution, right? Like, so they bring back LL Cool J, so to speak. They bring Nas to the next level. They introduce Foxy Brown, but, you know, Foxy was also known for other reasons. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't break, like, Trackmasters didn't break Foxy Brown necessarily. They were just there, you know, they were there at the time. You know, they are a part of the Firm album, which, you know, doesn't really work out the way everybody wanted. They bring Will Smith back. Like, they've got all this stuff. But 50 Cent was supposed to be the guy that they brought.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, signed to Sony. They have their own deal with Sony. Like, this was a whole thing. They did the classic 90s thing where, okay, we get the song, we put it on the soundtrack. And that's how you... And they did a bunch of stuff on that soundtrack. And that's how you introduce the artist and all this other stuff. And then, you know... 50 gets shot and everything goes sideways.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he got, is it pretty well established that he got shot because of Ghetto Quran?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's exactly why he got shot.
And so, you know, scared off Sony. I went back and listened to Power of a Dollar today.
Nice. Okay.
I don't think that would have blown 50 Cent up.
No.
Could it have been like kind of moderately successful? Maybe. You know, yeah. Like it would have been a totally different 50 Cent career. But like they worked with 50 from like day one.
Yeah.
And like, you know, 50 was supposed to be their guy. But yeah, How to Rob is, it's interesting to go back and listen to old 50 Cent, right? Because you hear like the bits that would eventually get there.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't there in 99. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So why is How to Rob on your list?
It was just iconic at the time. It's 90. I think for all the reasons you said, 50 had a lot of buzz coming out. He's the Trackmasters artist. And then the song itself, the beat isn't anything to write home about.
Right.
But I think 50 makes the song by, you know, robbing the industry, I guess. It got people talking for sure.
Oh, for sure. I mean, how many people like threw shots at 50 after that?
Jay,
famous
Pun. Who else? Jay and Pun, right?
Didn't Ray and Ghost do
yes.
an interlude? Yeah.
Yes. Yep. That's enough. Shoot. you have Rockefeller, Terror Squad, and Wu-Tang chasing after you. That's enough. That's enough. Yeah. How to Rob definitely on my list. I've got this. I mean, I don't like the song at all, but I feel like it's definitive. Destiny's Child, Independent Women.
It's not on my list, but I see why you would say that. Yeah. I mean, I didn't realize they produced that. I had no idea.
Yeah, me neither.
I would have thought Dark Child.
Yes. Correct.
Correct. Yeah, it's so interesting like how interconnected all these like artists are, right? Like I almost wonder if it's a case where the deal was, look, you appear on 50's first single, we'll do Independent Women. Like, you got to wonder how all that connects, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah, Independent Women, I mean, that's a huge hit.
Yeah.
Like, we're not ever probably going to do a Destiny's Child / Beyonce Definitive 15 here on Clock Radio Speakers.
That would be interesting.
That's on the list probably, right? It is for Destiny's Child for sure. Is it for Beyonce? I don't know.
Man, a Beyonce Definitive 15 from two men would be really interesting.
We might need to have some other folks on that to help out.
Well, do we?
It's never stopped us before.
Well, I'm saying is like, I don't think we're going to approach it from like a, a mansplaining sort of view. I think we're going to see like, okay, these were the songs that we liked. It'll probably be a bunch of stuff off her first album and off her self-titled album.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, you explain why. Yeah. I don't have to explain it. So, go ahead.
If you're talking R&B, I mean, this is R&B and hip-hop. This is like, this song has to be on the list, and it's Best of Me Part 2.
1,000% on my list.
It's a perfect song.
Yeah.
It's an iconic video.
Yep.
It is. So, Trackmasters, when they did this whole big interview with Complex, where they, like, broke down all their classics and told lots of stories, they talked about how they were trying to make what they call block party records.
Mm.
And like, that's Best of Me Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's a lot of their records, actually. Like, they, I think they did a pretty good job at that.
Yeah.
But like, Best of Me Part 2, just Jay in his prime. Maya sounds good. The beat is fantastic.
It's prime Maya too.
Yeah. Easy, Aron.
Yeah, it's prime Maya too. Hey.
Oh.
Oh. That's how you know I'm old. That's what old men say when they see an attractive woman. Hey.
Oh, God.
Just creeps. All right. Anyway.
Anyway, Best of Me Part 2.
Yep.
Ridiculous.
Shout out to Wayne for killing that record, too.
That, I mean, that's, sure. But, like, Jay is amazing on that.
Sure. I'm just saying, like, also... Lil Wayne rapped over this and killed it, like bodied it. That might be top three. I mean, a Wayne definitive 15 would be really interesting.
Yeah, we're gonna need somebody else to help out on that one.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I do that one for sure. Okay. So keep it in that block party, because now I think that makes sense. That block party aesthetic. I've got the remix to Total's No One Else on my list with Kim, Foxy, and the Brat. I think that represents an era in hip hop that don't really talk about.
Do I know that song?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
Is there a video for that?
Yes, there is.
Hold on. Oh, yeah.
Oh, come on.
I mean, you're right. It's absolutely an aesthetic. It is the, it's funny. It's the formula that Puff gets credit for.
Mm-hmm.
But the Trackmasters did just as much, if not more than Puff did to make it work, which is, we're going to take the R&B melodies and we're going to take the hip hop drums and we're going to put them together.
Mm-hmm. I mean, people, that's the blend tape aesthetic, right?
It's blend tape aesthetic, right?
Yep. And yeah, Puff gets the credit for it. Shout out to Ron G, Mr. Rello, J Dell. But no, Trackmasters, I mean, all of these records are blend tapes. Nah, man. This video is fine. I need to do a video like this.
Black and white.
It's glossy, but it's still black and white.
Black and white in front of the in front of the white backdrop.
Yeah, with the ring light. Yep. Yep. I need to do a remix to something. All right, let me take this idea off. Cut that out.
I had to put Fiesta. Let's talk about the later R. Kelly stuff. I had to talk about Fiesta remix. It's on the list. It's the last one on my list.
Yep, absolutely.
It's so definitive for an era. Like, I can remember like being at like parties in college and hearing this. Like, it is just so definitive that that clap became such a thing in hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where it became derided and like sort of like, oh, don't overuse the clap.
Mm-hmm.
But
no more hand claps, please.
No more hand claps, please. Right. It's definitely the best thing that ever came out of R. Kelly, Jay-Z, and Trackmasters working together. It was so successful that they thought they should make not just one, but two Best of Both Worlds albums.
Woof.
Which are all mostly pretty bad.
Yes. Well, not all bad.
Pretty bad.
There are records on there that are pretty good. I liked Somebody's Girl.
I think people really try to talk themselves into a lot of songs on there. Wait a minute. Hold on. I have not looked at this track list in a very long time. You mean to tell me there's a song on here called Naked, parentheses, Little Girls?
No.
Get out of here.
No.
Track 7.
Oh, man.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, man.
I don't even know what to say right now. Man, I was not expecting to see that when I opened up the Wikipedia for Best of Both Worlds.
All right. Well, we can't. Album just not on.
Jay's like, I don't want that anywhere.
Yeah, clearly, like, it's not even on YouTube.
I probably have it in my library. Hold up.
I wanted to play a song.
Jay's like, you can't find that anywhere.
Come on. I'm going to find this song because I want to laugh. Dang.
No, it's on Apple Music. Oh, wait, but if I tap it. Oh, yeah, it's there. Okay, so it's just called Naked on Apple Music.
Let's see if it's on title. It's not on Spotify.
Interesting. Spotify was like, what's that? An R. Kelly song called Naked? Nope.
Okay, there's...
I do kind of like the beat from Honey. I'll give him that.
Yeah, it's got some beats.
Yeah.
Remember Get This Money with Twista?
There's a lot of collapse on here, if I remember correctly.
Yes. Oh, come on. This is killing me. I want to play your favorite song in this. There it is. There we go. All right, Doc.
All right.
You know the words.
Yeah.
Sing along.
Oh, God.
Oh, that's terrible.
It's so bad.
There's somewhere in these 300 episodes, there is Doc singing that song.
Big chips. Yes.
Boom, 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 boom. Like, yo, they really tried. And I bought that album like an idiot.
Oh, no.
Oof. Maybe we need, do we need a definitive 15 on albums that we regret buying?
Let's see. We've got Unfinished Business. We've got me buying DJ Kool's Let Me Clear My Throat album. We've got
the E-40 Southwest Riders compilation. We've got the Sprung soundtrack.
Wait, what else was on the Sprung soundtrack aside from...
Who You With? I paid $17 for a maxi single for one song.
You know, what's the way? What else is on there? There's a One in a Million remix on there.
No.
It's probably not good.
No. Talib Kweli's second album, Mos Def the New Danger. Did you buy Collision Course?
No, did I buy Collision Course? The last Jay-Z album I actually physically bought was probably Blueprint.
Okay.
Because after that I was just bootlegging.
So yeah, that was the era.
Oh man.
Okay. Are we ready to talk honorable mentions?
I am, for sure.
Okay. Where am I going? Okay. I'm going to leave that one for you.
Okay.
My first one, I'm just going to name them because we're running way too late. Okay, so N.O.R.E.
Yeah. It's a good record.
Yep. Really, really dope. Method Man, Breakups to Makeups.
Not on my list, but I'm not surprised it's on yours. You like that song a lot.
I do. Yeah. I like that album. T2000 was dope.
Yeah.
Affirmative Action Remix. I did not know that they produced Black's 808. Boom Like an 808. I had no idea.
I mean, R. Kelly.
R. Kelly signed Black?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure Black is all R. Kelly, right?
Maybe.
Let's find out.
Okay. Nature,
no.
Man.
No, I don't think so. Maybe not.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway.
Nature, Man's World.
Underrated.
Yes. I got. People talk about Changes being. I think they produced Changes, the Tupac record.
Yeah.
I was more partial to Until the End of Time with RL.
I don't really like that.
They also had a version of Letter to My Unborn that I liked that sampled a Michael Jackson Liberian Girl. The thing I liked about that song was that it reminded me of all those Tupac remixes that were terrible because nobody was making music that sounded like Pac would rap on it. Like Liberian Girl sounds like a song. I keep wanting to call it Liberian Girl. Liberian Girl sounds like a song that Tupac would rap over. So I like that one. I like Nas, Everybody Wants to Rule the World. I put Wu-Tang Back in the Game on mine.
Oh no.
Just for giggles. I put Jenny from the Block on there because I forgot about it, and I think that's important to show like where they went, as well as the Livin' La Vida Loca remix with Fat Joe and Big Pun and Ricky Martin. I'm skipping some of these because I know they're on your list. Escobar 97. Oh, the Monstars, Hit 'Em High.
Definitely, definitely on my list.
Crazy.
Hit 'Em High is really good.
Yeah, it is. It's a great record. And to wrap it up, I've got the Michael Jackson Butterflies remix with Eve, the You Remind Me remix with Method Man and Blue Cantrell, and finally the You Rock My World remix with Jay-Z.
Hmm.
There's some other ones I have on there, but I'm pretty sure they're on your list.
And I was going to say, you're saving them for me.
Yeah, you got it.
Mariah Carey, The Roof.
1,000,000% on my list.
Oh, man. It's like one of my favorite. You made me like that song. That song is so good.
Yeah.
So they've got a handful of Nas songs that are like iconic, and they have co-production credits on them.
Okay.
They co-produced Hate Me Now.
Did they?
They did.
Huh. Wonder what does co-production mean for them?
Yeah, I don't know. Because those synths don't sound like, you know, that doesn't sound like them necessarily.
No, not at all.
Blaze of 50.
Yes, I have 1,000,000% on my list.
Drunk by Myself.
1,000,000% on my list.
And I know this is on your list. Street Dreams remix. I can't believe that didn't make your 15.
1,000,000% on my list. Yeah, as well as Watch Them Niggas from It Was Written is on my list as well.
And we vaguely talked about Horse and Carriage, but like...
It was taken off my list at the last minute.
It was 6 months late.
It was still a hit?
Kind of. Was it?
I feel like it.
Let me look at the what are the numbers from this? Yeah, it you know what? It did pretty good.
I mean, for it to be a Cameron song, I would say it was a hit.
I feel like they just kind of missed the boat a little bit. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But like, I guess what else are you going to put as a single from that album, right? I mean, that has to be on there.
Yeah, because your other singles are Pull It and 357. And
Pull It doesn't even make the album.
Oh, that's trash. I love that record.
Yeah, I think that's all I've got for mine. Do you got any more on yours?
Really?
Yeah, what else you got?
Let me see. A lot of these records we just kind of talked about, like... I did want to talk about Nick Cannon and B2K's Feeling Freaky, but...
Nope. Nope.
No, we covered it all with the Fiesta remix, so we're good. Because I wanted to talk about like how they hoard out that the Spanish guitars.
They did a remix of This Is For The Lover and You.
Yeah, they did. It's not good. I was going to put it on my list because I thought the original was the remix, and I listened to the remix, and it's not what we think it is. No. They did a remix of Mark Anthony's I Need to Know.
This Is For The Lover and You remix isn't bad. Listen to it right now.
Nah, not compared to it. It's way better. The original's way better.
Wait, LL has a verse on this?
No, that's not. No, you're listening to the... I don't know what you're listening to, but yes, there's a Babyface. It's Babyface LL, and I believe he brought back Howard Hewitt for that.
Hmm.
Yeah, but he did. The original version is cool. I don't think you may be listening to the original version, and it's labeled the remix, but it's the original version.
I don't think so. I know what This Is For The Lover and You sounds like.
Okay. All right, let me know.
Anyway, it's not bad. It's not bad. You got it? Not bad. All right.
Yeah, that's it. I'm good. I'm sorry. Capone and Noriega and the Locks, Bleeding from the Mouth from the In Too Deep soundtrack.
I went back and listened to the first CNN album.
And?
Man, I think I've just totally underrated that my whole life.
I'm glad you said that.
It's like a forgotten, like...
That album's going to sound great in about 2 months.
Sounds great right now.
I know, but I'm saying when it gets really cold out. Oh, my Illegal Life.
It's you know, it's so clearly like, it was so clearly supposed to come out in 96, right? It sounds like a 1996 album.
Yeah.
But man, if you were a Noriega fan, what a, because that album doesn't come out until 97, what a jarring shift between that and the Nori for, in the Nori solo album. People must have been, because I wasn't really, I didn't own the War Report album as a kid or as a teenager.
Right, me neither. Yep.
So like, imagine owning that in 97 and then you hear Super Thug.
Mm-hmm.
You must have just been like, what is this?
Because
like, you know, NRE, like that's close enough. Like that's fine. Right? That's not too outside. That's kind of a dark lead single, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But like, man, Super Thug must have blown people's minds. Anyway, anything else you want to say about Trackmasters?
No, I really hope that this episode gives them their flowers because I was pleasantly surprised by just how much they had.
Yeah, same. I mean, for me, the biggest thing was like, I just didn't realize the extent to which like the aesthetic that I gave so much credit to Puff for in my mind was really just as much theirs. Maybe more so.
Yeah.
So I just like you, I just want to give them their credit, right?
Yep.
So yeah, that's all I got to say about Trackmasters. Anything else you want to talk about, man?
No, man. I'm done.
You mean because it's 9:30 and we've been recording for almost exactly 3 hours?
Yeah, and I want to watch NBA.
All right. Nothing else you want to plug?
Nope. I'm good.
All right. Well, thank you everybody as always. Please hit us up at CRS Podcast and let us know what you think. And we will definitely be back next week. And until then, yeah. See you then.